The body of a missing Great Falls eye doctor has been found in Lake Elwell. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Reporter Justin Steck takes us to a popular farmer's market, and in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with a state official about a new study of how people use the Blackfoot and Bitterroot Rivers. Officials in Liberty County say the body of a Great Falls eye doctor who did not return from a fishing trip at Lake Elwell last week has surfaced. Undersheriff Doug Riggin says the body of 50-year-old John Cum surfaced at about 9 a.m. today, about 20 yards from shore. The water is about 15 feet deep in that area, and Riggin said search and rescue crews had dragged that area several times after Cum was reported missing on June 6th. The body was sent to the state crime lab in Missoula for an autopsy. Officials have said they believe Cum drowned while swimming after the boat because it drifted away from shore while he parked his pickup truck. Lake Elwell was created by Tiber Dam and is about 20 miles southwest of Chester.
And in other news from around the state, officials report an outbreak of norovirus in the Mammoth area of Yellowstone National Park this week. Yellowstone spokesman Al Nash says the bug is thought to have been brought in by visitors on a couple of tour buses who were ill when they entered the park. Mammoth is on the northern end of Yellowstone near the Montana border. Nash tells the Jackson Hole News and Guide that gastrointestinal illness peaked last weekend and is on the decline now and infected about 30 people. Before lab tests confirmed norovirus, Yellowstone staff and personnel decided early on to treat the situation as if it were norovirus. That means cleaning public spaces more frequently and making sure the employees are symptom-free before several days before returning to work.
A homeless man who pleaded guilty to helping hide bloody clothing after an anaconda man was beaten to death has been sentenced to 5 years with the Department of Corrections. The Montana Standard reports 20-year-old David Newbold could avoid prison if he successfully completes chemical dependency treatment and a boot camp program. Newbold pleaded guilty in September to tampering with physical evidence after the October 2011 beating of 32-year-old Teddy James Hildebrandt in Butte. District Judge Kurt Kruger followed the plea agreement and sentenced Newbold yesterday to 10 years with the Department of Corrections with five suspended. Shane Hans is serving a 40-year prison sentence for killing Hildebrandt after finding him sleeping in a spot at a transient camp.
An Idaho man who stole a truck in western Montana and led officers on a 30-mile chase to the slopes of a ski hill has been sentenced to 20 years in the Montana Department of Corrections with 15 suspended. The Ravalli Republic reports 67-year-old Larry J. Gardner of Pocatello, Idaho, was sentenced yesterday by District Judge James Haynes. Gardner earlier pleaded guilty to theft, two counts of felony criminal endangerment, and along with speeding and fleeing from police for the December 2012 chase. Prosecutors say Gardner took a pickup truck from a Hamilton Hospital parking lot and was pulled over by Darby Marshal Larry Rose for speeding. However, Gardner drove off. The chase ended when Gardner could no longer drive the pickup up a ski hill.
An East Helena man with a lengthy criminal record has been sentenced to over a year in federal prison for Social Security fraud. The Independent Record reports U.S. District Judge Charles Lovell sentenced 31-year-old Antonio Matthias Peterson to 15 months in prison and ordered him to pay just over $63,000 in restitution. Prosecutors say Peterson's wife died in a car crash in March 2008, and he applied to Social Security for surviving spouse with child and care benefits, as well as benefits for his minor son. However, the boy was living with his grandparents, and Peterson did not provide them with any financial support. Court records say Peterson acknowledged using the Social Security benefits to buy a house.
The Rainbow family plans to hold its annual gathering somewhere in Montana, probably next month, but they haven't picked the exact site yet. Forest Service spokeswoman Cass Cairns says a council of the loosely organized eclectic group is currently meeting at the racetrack campground near Anaconda to come up with a location.
Should be hearing pretty soon, but that again, it really depends on how they go with their spring council. They're meeting right now as we speak and trying to determine where that site's going to be, and then basically we'll all kind of find out about the same time.
The national gatherings of the Rainbow family can attract thousands of diverse people.
It could be anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people. It's just once the word gets out, those that want to share in the experience, and they do come from all walks of life, will converge to the gathering site.
The Rainbow family held a national gathering in the Big Hole Valley in 2000. The gathering will be on national forest land, and the Forest Service and law enforcement will patrol the gathering.
It's managed with law enforcement officials and stuff. So, and that's only for the purpose of protecting or providing for public and health safety. And that's really, you know, necessary. So they have patrols going 24/7 just to watch for any illegal activity and so that they can take care of it quickly. When you get that many people from all walks of life, you know, coming together for a single purpose, there's always going to be a contingent of individuals that maybe have a different agenda on mind.
Karen says she expects to hear soon where the Rainbow family will gather in Montana.
New Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation Director John Tubbs has more than 20 years' experience working for the DNRC. He served as DNRC's Water Resources Division Administrator from 2006 until he left in 2009 to work for the U.S. Department of the Interior as Deputy Assistant Secretary for Water and Science. He has returned to Montana to head the DNRC under Governor Steve Bullock's administration. Tubbs tells Capitol reporter Dan Boyce about what he learned from his time in federal government and how he believes that experience will help him moving forward.
It allowed me that 3.5 years to really expand my scope of understanding of those very issues that face this nation and how the implications of these national policies and also seeing just other states struggle with many, many of the same issues. I gained a lot of knowledge. I learned a lot about the federal system, and now I bring that back to the state of Montana. So I have a much broader base, I think, of understanding on the policies and the politics of natural resources management, and I hope that's an asset that I bring back to the department. I also have a better understanding of why, when we are frustrated with the federal government and the federal agencies, what some of the inner workings of the federal agencies are that create that frustration at the state level. And understanding that a little better, I think, will help us navigate with those federal agencies. In large part, I think my experience in Washington, D.C., will help me tremendously as director of DNRC.
After having such a long career with the DNRC before you left, and now you get to come here and head the whole department, are there areas within the department that perhaps as somebody that worked within irked you enough that you feel are areas for improvement now that you have the opportunity at the helm?
Well, I don't know if any of them irked me enough to cause me to change them. I'm very cautious, for example, at agency reorganizations, having been through several, because I would only suggest a reorganization of program responsibilities if I had a clear roadmap to what the change was going to be, why we were making the change, and assurances that when we made the change, it would be effective. One of our big challenges, and I don't think we're atypical of any the government agencies and, frankly, corporate world today, is information technology. The world of the cloud did not exist in anywhere, way, shape, or form as it does today just 4 or 5 years ago. And our IT services and meeting the public's needs is the future communication path that we have with many of our citizens. So one area that we are focusing on at the DNRC and frankly the governor's office is focusing on at the state level is to really take a close look at our ability to serve information to the public through social media, through the web, and other electronic means. And I think that will present both a kind of a capacity challenge within the resources of the department, potentially a financial challenge, and certainly a learning challenge as an agency moves forward in a rapidly changing environment.
What do you see as the state's resource challenges moving forward? How are those challenges evolving?
Nothing stays the same. Whether you agree or not with the source of global climate change, I would hope that the majority of Montanans agree that our climate is changing, We need more science on actually how what those changes and what the uncertainty is, and we need, you know, a great deal of work on how we adaptively manage our lands and water. Another area that I just am really focused on is working between agencies, with local governments, other state agencies, and federal governments. And there's just a lot of things that I have to learn and to do that effectively. And I think the margin really is great to the benefit of the state. If we can work together between our agencies more effectively over the course of this term.
Okay, sir. Well, great. Well, I've been speaking with John Tubbs, the new director of the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. Sir, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
Montana counties are receiving $26.5 million this year under a program that compensates local governments for the amount of non-taxable federal land in their jurisdiction. Federal officials said yesterday that Flathead County and Lewis and Clark County will receive the highest amounts, more than $2 million each. The amount of payments statewide is virtually unchanged from last year and amounts to just under $1 an acre. The Interior Department gives out the money based on the acreage of federal land and population of each county or jurisdiction. That includes lands within national forests and national parks, under control of the Bureau of Land Management, and within Bureau of Reclamation water projects. Daniels County and Northeast Montana is alone among the state's 56 counties in not receiving a payment.
Every Saturday from May through October, part of downtown Missoula is transformed into an open-air farmers market reminiscent of those found in Europe. Families and friends, fueled by coffee and pastries, gather at, quote, the best place to take out of towners, according to voters of the Missoula Independent's annual Best of Missoula survey. The Missoula Farmers Market began in 1972 and continues to be a staple for purchasing the best of what the Missoula area has to grow. Reporter Justin Steck visited with vendors and shoppers last Saturday.
Two of humankind's fundamental needs can be met by visiting Missoula's Saturday Farmers Market, eating and socializing. The City of Missoula and Montana Rail Link help make the market possible, but market manager John Lundquist says the event is about the community.
The people in Missoula make it special. There's no other small city like Missoula that supports two different farmers markets as well as two different craft markets going on at the same time, and they're all successful.
Lundquist estimated about 90 vendors on this day, with 150 spaces available.
Now that things are coming in, we'll fill up and we'll have full markets for the rest of the year.
Margaret Mahlberg is coming to the market for her third year.
And what are you selling here today?
We're selling caramels. The original recipe comes from my mother-in-law, who lives in West Glacier, Montana.
Pecan, sweet and salty, and original sat out on the table with slightly different caramel tones.
People like the sweet and salty the best. I still think original's the best. It's my favorite.
At 25 cents, it would be foolish not to get one, or four. A few vendors down, I met the co-owner of Mill Creek Farms in Hamilton, Sean McCoy. He had a healthy list of vegetables to offer.
We have radishes, kale, mixed salad greens, a spicy mixed salad greens, spinach, sun gold tomatoes, green garlic, and lots of plants.
For those without a green thumb or a garden, the farmers market provides the perfect opportunity to connect growers to eaters. Lisa Strickle from Mountain View Gardens in Kalispell sells tomatoes, peppers, and homemade pesto at her booth.
It's going very well. We've been very blessed. People just love our product. It's fresh and no pesticides, so it's very healthy.
Lang Mu has been coming to the market as long as he can remember. It's not only a tradition for his family, it's part of his culture.
Part of life that has always been with us Hmong people, and so just trying to keep that way of life in a way, and at the same time so I can teach it out to my kids and... Yeah. And feed myself.
That's Bob Mislevic on accordion. He says the farmer's market has an atmosphere conducive to his style of music.
It has a European cafe flavor, and with the vegetables and fruit markets, it has a flavor definitely of a European street market.
My name is Cynthia Wilson, and I'm selling 9 Mile Preserves and Piccalilli. Piccalilli is actually an old-fashioned term for relish.
Kevin Myers, I'm the owner of Goodyville Bakery and Restaurant. We're Missoula's only totally gluten-free bakery and restaurant. I actually started last summer just with the bakery. It was so successful, I opened up the restaurant.
Comfortably seated across from Kevin was the proprietor of Earth Oven Breads, Don Van Ice. He offers a country French bread with a little sourdough.
I bake it in an adobe oven, so it has a much better crust to it. I say it's like no other bread you've ever tasted in your life.
Black Mountain Moan started in with a lively set of music on the main stage, contrasting Mislavik playing at the other end of the market.
Missoula's got that quality of people that really feed into the farmer's market, and the farmer's market feeds off the people.
Lucy Brieger at Lifeline Produce has been coming to the market for about 25 years. She faced a minor issue.
I'm selling bedding plants and some accidental cucumbers.
Accidental? How are they? How are they?
Well,
accidental?
I wasn't really expecting them to. I wasn't expecting so many to be so ready so early.
Brieger says the market success is owed to the food savvy of Missoulians.
It's Missoula, and people here are really sophisticated about understanding local and sustainable.
Here's a few of those sophisticrats.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Audrey. I've only had coffee so far. Kettle corn.
Kettle corn
for Dave.
So,
that's nice. His favorite. We've just gone from one block to the next and enjoyed music. Yep.
My name's Donna, and I'm here for great people watching, good food, and just to enjoy Missoula.
We come down to the market because the market's here. They always have good produce. The price is reasonable and usually have what I want. Coming from Seattle, and we went over to eastern Montana, and now we're going back home and rehydrate.
Jeremy Jenkins, and I'm here to get my dinner.
What's on the menu tonight?
I've got kale, carrots, and I might get some beets, stir fry it all up.
I come down every Saturday morning. It's such a great place to pick up good things.
My name's Jen, and I like to come down here with my children. They really enjoy coming to the market. They love to get little treats, baked goods, and look at the big train and hear the music.
The farmer's market runs from 8 until 12:30 and can be found by the big red X's on the north end of Higgins Street. The Missoula Saturday Market and the Clark Fork Market can also be found downtown Saturday morning. If you somehow have a free weekend this summer, here's a way to get a healthy serving of Missoula. For Montana Public Radio, I'm Justin Steck.
Father's Day is this Sunday, but some Missoula fathers and grandfathers gathered for lunch today at the Missoula Senior Center to start celebrating early. Roast beef, mashed potatoes, and chocolate cupcakes were on the menu, along with some shared thoughts about fatherhood.
Happy Father's Day.
Mothers got to go in line for Mother's Day, so fathers get to go first for Father's Day. I wish that it was recognized as much as Mother's Day. I know Mother's Day is important, but, you know, we went to go get decorations for fathers, and we couldn't find anything.
Well, it's the male version of Mother's Day. It's a celebration of parents, and it's a time, I think, when children look to their parents and honor them for, I suppose, the work that they have done in bringing them up and giving them life.
One of the best days of the year for me. I get waited on hand and foot, and, you know. I get spoiled.
The real story about being a father is feelings.
Oh, gosh, many things.
You watch your children grow up.
You grow.
You try to do the best you can for them.
You give up your selfish attitude about yourself.
A lot of responsibility, a lot of heartaches, worries. But you grow with your children. You just don't realize it. As they mature, you mature.
Got to think about the kids instead of just yourself. You know.
It's a lot of work.
Other than that, it's great, I guess.
The bottom line is you never forget. It's always somewhere in the back of your heart or in the back of your mind, even though you're busy with other things, you'll be running along, humming and singing to yourself, and all of a sudden you're thinking, geez, it's my oldest daughter's birthday in 6 days.
Gives you a lot of time to think about stuff now that the kids aren't home. And finally hear yourself talk.
It was in 1966 that Lyndon B. Johnson designated the third Sunday in June as Father's Day. 6 years later, in 1972, it was made a permanent national holiday.
Various agencies are teaming up to research recreation patterns on the Blackfoot and Bitterroot Rivers. The study will be conducted by Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, the Bureau of Land Management, the Forest Service, and the University of Montana. In this evening's feature interview, FWP's Fishing Access Site Manager, Chet Krauser, says one thing is clear. People love our rivers, and more of us are using them.
Our rivers are popular for angling, whether it's float angling or wade angling, and also just recreational floating, meaning in a raft and inner tubes. and then also whitewater activities, too, around Missoula.
What do we already know about recreational use on the Blackfoot, maybe Bitterroot as well?
Sure. We've got various types of data that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has collected over the years on different water bodies. Probably one of the best sources of information that we have, in particularly as it trends back over time, is angling pressure estimates, and that gives us an idea of the amount of fishing that occurs on any particular water body, and then in some cases even broken down more specifically on river stretches. And that's probably the longest running and most established data that we've got on, for use on rivers. We've done a little bit more work on the Blackfoot, and we have specifically through some of our self-registration that's occurred over the past few years, and then also some other studies that we've done. We've got a better idea of some of the types of use and patterns of use on the Blackfoot, and those are really some of the pieces that we have to work with for now. So not a lot of stuff for us to draw from as we look at managing these resources for the public.
And what does all this data tell us, basically?
We've seen a couple different things. We've seen changes in types of use. Even over the last, say, 10 years, we've seen people start to get involved in more use in various sections of the river. Example, the Blackfoot has had sort of problems with some types of behaviors and use-related issues in the lower part of the Blackfoot, and we've seen changes in that and use patterns with people looking at the river around Missoula as an opportunity and floating closer to Missoula. We've seen large increases in use at our sites closer to Missoula, meaning East Missoula through to our Kona fishing access site on the Clark Fork River. And so we've definitely seen changes that way. As far as the data collection stuff that we've gotten, you know, river recreation is popular no matter how you put it. And there's always fluctuations depending on seasonality and temperatures and things like that. But the general trend is that folks love to use the rivers, and that use is just continuing to kind of increase. What we're trying to figure out additionally now with some of our efforts is a better understanding of the types of use and the when, the where, all that kind of stuff, but then also how people assess their experience while they're out there. And that relates to levels of crowding or encounters with other floaters or what kind of experience they had and how much they enjoyed it, those kinds of things.
So basically it sounds as though the river activity is becoming more popular, more people out there. If that's correct, is that what, a function of just more people coming into Western Montana? What's going on, do you think?
You know, it's probably a function of both. I mean, certainly, you know, we've seen growth in lots of places throughout Montana, particularly in the West. And with growth, obviously, comes more people who are looking for opportunities to recreate. I think some of the awareness about the river and its opportunities has increased around Missoula as well. I think with Brennan's Wave being downtown and some of the events associated with that, people have become more aware of the Clark Fork, particularly right in Missoula, as being a recreational opportunity, where maybe they hadn't looked at it that way in the past. I think that in conjunction with the Milltown Dam removal project and some of the efforts related to cleanups through town and floating through town and stuff like that has just sort of opened people's eyes to the river as an opportunity, you know, right here in town. And so some of it has just been people's awareness. But I think probably together it's a combination of opportunities and also an increase in growth.
Yeah, and a few moments ago you mentioned some of the problems on the lower Blackfoot. When I think of that, I think, what, maybe John's Red area?
Yeah, and I think that would be the familiar or what folks would recall as far as kind of a problem area. And it did take a few years to kind of turn things around with that, and it was a involved cooperative effort amongst a lot of different partnering agencies. And at this point, we've now kind of turned the corner on that and have addressed some of those issues. But it's still very popular. It's not like we're seeing declines in people being out there. What we've seen is that people, I think, along with the increased use, have also helped spread the word about what responsible use is and being considerate of river users and the ethics and etiquette that go along with being out there and enjoying yourself and the resource.
Yeah, and for those not familiar with John's Red, it was an area where, at least a little while ago, lots of young people were getting together, drinking, break-ins in cars, that sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, it was, and it was probably I want to say, kind of 2005-06 type time frame. So it's been a few years back now where we were kind of in the thick of it. But it was that. It was a very much a party atmosphere. The term we oftentimes refer to is that you ceased seeing families come there for recreation, and that wasn't what we would like to see and what a lot of folks here in West Central Montana wanted to see. And that was our goal, was to bring back that family atmosphere and alleviate the partying and some of the behavior and disorderly types of conduct issues that we were starting to see.
Yeah. So, Chet, for this upcoming research effort, a bunch of agencies are coming together. Who's coming together? How will this be done?
We've got a partnership with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and the University of Montana to come up with some of the research approach here. And then we've also partnered with the BLM up on the Blackfoot and have for many, many years in terms of managing recreation. And then down in the Bitterroot, on the West Fork of the Bitterroot, we're partnering with the Forest Service and some of their properties that they manage down there to sort of implement this effort on a larger scale throughout our administrative region.
What sort of questions then will people be asked? How will it be done now?
There'll be a two-part effort, and the first part will be kind of a self-registration system, and that system looks like a kiosk that's at the put-in and take-out locations on the Blackfoot, on the Bitterroot, and on the West Fork of the Bitterroot. And there's small cards in some boxes at those kiosks. They're a two-part kind of card. The first part gives us some information about the when, the where, the time, number of folks in the party, etc. That card is detached and left at the put-in, and then as folks float, they'll take a card with them, and when they get to the takeout, give us a rating of how their trip went and deposit that in the takeout location box. And then the second piece of our effort will be an actual survey. And the survey effort will take place on the Blackfoot and also on the West Fork of the Bitterroot. It'll occur throughout most of the summer. And the objective there is to really look at the information that our self-registration cards are collecting and making sure that what we're getting is a valid assessment, that we're getting good compliance with folks utilizing that, in essence basically letting us know that the data we're getting is good data. And in conjunction with that, we'll be asking some other questions just about folks' perceptions and how they would rate and evaluate the river and our management, and let us know about things that we could do to improve.
So what are you doing? What'd you like? What you didn't like? That sort of stuff.
Yep.
All right. You know, sometimes at the end of a long day in the sun and you're being on the water, you just want to hop in your car at the end of it, go home, maybe meet up with some other folks for lunch or dinner or something. Is this a long, involved process?
It's not. We definitely acknowledge that. I mean, I love to get out and float, so I know the hustle and bustle that comes with the end of a trip, and especially if you've got to get back and take care of things. It really should only take a couple of minutes, and the information is really, really important to us. We'd really like to get a better idea of what is going on out there and what folks are thinking, because it really helps us manage better for the public their resources and the opportunities for river recreation.
And when does this start? When does it end?
We've started the survey effort on the Blackfoot for the season already, so you'll bump into folks at the takeout locations is where we'll be doing the survey effort. The kiosk boxes with self-registration are out on the ground now in the Bitterroot, Blackfoot, and the West Fork. We just finished the West Fork, and the survey effort on the West Fork will start on Monday, and it'll flow through about the middle of August.
Okay, and in the meantime, we have something kind of cool coming up this weekend, yeah?
Free fishing, yeah. It's a great opportunity to get out with your family and take advantage of some of the great fishing opportunities we have in Montana and enjoy time with your family and fathers.
All right, been speaking with Chet Krauser, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Fishing Access Site Manager. Thanks a lot for the time.
Uh-huh, thank you.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Continental Divide, tonight will be partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers. Lows will be in the 30s. Tomorrow calls for mostly sunny skies and highs in the 70s. Sunday, expect partly cloudy skies, highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s. For central Montana, tonight will be mostly cloudy in the evening with isolated rain showers, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow has sunny skies with highs in the upper 70s. Sunday, expect partly cloudy skies and highs in the 70s. For southwest Montana, tonight will be partly cloudy with a slight chance of thunderstorms, lows in the upper 30s. Tomorrow, expect sunny skies with highs around 70s. Sunday will be partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers. Highs will be in the lower 70s.
If you have a comment about tonight's newscast, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetic.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.